Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very, very welcome back. Dervla McDonald sitting in for Brendan. Now, the Dublin Horse Show is an iconic part of the Irish calendar. It opens this week, and amid all of the show jumping and the dressage, one man will be talking about how horse therapy can help humans thrive. Good afternoon, Rupert Isaacson.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Tell me, what is equine therapy and how did you get involved in it?
Equine therapy is the use of horses as a, some people would say tool, some people would say colleague, to help with physiological and neurological neuropsychiatric conditions that people might have. And the horse can do this because they can provide, imagine if you needed to have some effect on your body through some very expensive machine, medical machine. That's sort of the horse. It can create all sorts of reactions in your body when you sit on it, when you're next to it for various reasons. But it can also have the same effect on the brain because of how it makes your body move. And this is a field which has been going since about World War II. And it started with people coming back from the war with their limbs blown off, going back to family riding schools and wanting to ride and sort of Paralympic riding came as a result of that. But they also realized that not only could you learn to ride a horse with a body that had been made less able, but you could, it had a great effect on the trauma of the battlefield. And over the last, 80 years, study after study after study after study after study, to the point that, say, for example, the German government for the last 30 years has in its health ministry a whole wing just dedicated to equine therapy that's fully funded by the government. So it's been well studied, well proven, but it divides into two areas, one for physical challenges and one for neuropsychiatric challenges.
So did you come to this knowledge or awareness about equine therapy through, you have a background in journalism?
Pure accident. And my son was diagnosed with autism in 2004. Really severe, non-verbal, incontinent, tantruming all the time. And I was just completely lost. I didn't know what to do. And I am a horseman. I'm a journalist, but I also always was a pro horseman on the side. The irony, the great irony, is that I was actually keeping him away from horses. I thought he wasn't safe around them because he was so wild. And because I'm a journalist like you, I ask questions. And so I thought, okay, who can help me? That would need to be an adult with autism who started life as severe as my kid and who somehow made it. Who's that person? And I found her. That person is a person called Dr. Temple Grandin. She's a professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University and a neuroscientist, brain scientist. And when she was 3-4, she was rocking in a corner, nonverbal, wiping her poo on the walls. I hope I can say poo on the radio.
You can say it.
And they were going to institutionalize her. And her mother said, no, there's an intellect in there. And through very, very intensive one-to-one working with her and following her child's interests, which happened to be horses, they found their way. And now, of course, she's a multiple best-selling author. She's a very successful academic. She comes here to Ireland a lot. She's also revolutionized the livestock industry to make slaughter practices less stressful.
And what did the horses do for her?
Well, the science now has found that what they do is they provide a hormone in your body when you sit on them and they move underneath you. If they're moving in a balanced way, and that hormone is called oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone of happiness. But crucially, it's also, in parallel, the hormone of communication. So if you take someone, say, with autism, who is full of anxiety because they have an oversensitive nervous system and they have an overactive amygdala. The amygdala is the part of your brain that governs fight, flight and freeze and generates the stress hormone cortisol, which is a neurotoxin, cuts like a pair of scissors momentarily the connection between the back part of your brain, which is keeping you alive, and the front part of the brain, which is wondering what's for lunch, so that if an elephant explodes through the wall of this studio right now, you don't continue listening to boring old English guy. You dive to the side, and only when the elephant has gone through the other wall do you resume listening to boring old English guy. You have no choice. The cortisol is at work. Now, cortisol keeps you alive, but if you get too much of it, it's being triggered all the time, you can't learn because it's a neurotoxin.
It
shuts you down. Its job is to do that. So you're dealing with people who autism, auto autoism. Auto is the Greek word for the self. Mm. Selfism, locked within the self, the difficulties, the relationship with the exterior world. You can put a child in this position where they're being flooded with not only the antidote hormone to the cortisol, which is oxytocin, which tells the amygdala, hey, there's no elephant coming through the wall, relax.
Relax.
But also the communication hormone. People with autism don't want to communicate in general. So suddenly they begin to communicate.
What happened to my son? Yeah. When you took him, did you just sort of just introduce, we're just going to go horse riding
No,
today.
Absolutely. It happened more organically. So what happened was I went to see Temple Grandin and I said, how does my son become you? And she said, Rupert, do three things. And the three things were follow the child physically so you can observe what he gets into, emotionally so you can see what upsets him and what makes him happy. She said, those will be sensory triggers. And here's a tip. Most of the bad sensory triggers are man-made. So fluorescent strip lights, smell of industrial cleaning solvent, industrial noise and echo. That's think supermarket, think school, you know. And most of the good sensory triggers will be nature, because that's what the human organism is pre-programmed to thrive in, because we are animals. And do it outside where there's the good sensory triggers, and let them move a lot, because they're kinesthetic, kinetic learners. They learn by doing. Actually, most of us do. And I said, that sounds great. So I went home and I started doing that. And he immediately just wanted to go into the woods behind my house and put stuff in his mouth. And I said, okay, I don't want to say no, because I don't want to discourage communication. Luckily for me, I had spent a lot of time living with hunting and gathering tribes as a journalist. So I knew that about 80% of any environment you see in the world is edible. So I very quickly learned the 10 most obvious plants, and we were foraging together. And immediately we had this communication and this science and this fun.
Was he speaking to you, though, at that point?
There was some echolalia where he would repeat stuff he'd heard, like a advertising, half an advertising jingle or something like that, but couldn't say, mummy, I'm hungry, mummy, I'm thirsty, mummy, I love you. And anyway, so he saw in the course of one of these foraging trips, my neighbour's mare. And on the other side of the wood, I knew this mare. I knew she was safe. He went up to her, forged his own relationship with her, wanted to get up. He was jumping next to her with his arms up like this. Okay, so I put him up and kept a hand on him while she grazed. And all his agitated behaviours went away. So I thought, well, this is good. Didn't know why at this point, but okay, this is great. So I thought, well, what about riding? So this is in Texas. I used to live in Texas. Big old Western saddle, room for two, got up, rode down towards a pond. A heron got up and flapped away. And he said, heron.
He said the word.
And what I said, I can't repeat on the radio. I said, bleep. But bleep, he's talking, bleep, bleep, bleep. And I realised very quickly in the course of this, I just basically spent about 4 years in the saddle with him. And what I realised after a very short time was that the rhythm that the horse was moving in could get me more or less communication. And so I taught him to read up there. I taught him to do maths up there. Da, da, da. And
Can I just bring you back to that moment? Yeah. And I know there was an expletive involved, but, you know, and I was so interested in speaking to you because I have so many friends who have children with autism, and we read continually in our newspapers.
The key
now,
is oxytocin. The fight that parents have.
What was that moment like when he said, when he uttered that
word?
Well,
you've got to understand that I was in a state of utter desperation and despair, which a lot of parents listening right now will know exactly what I'm talking about. And you get all this conflicting information, and you're told to do all these therapies that don't seem to work. And suddenly this thing was working, and I didn't know why, I just knew it was. How crazy that it was the thing that's my biggest love in life, which is horses. But it was as if the hand had got to come down. And that feeling of miraculous relief, of serendipitous blessing.
You're close to tears, Rupert.
I am close to tears, yeah. And so what happened was I then wondered, was it him or just or other kids too? So I began to run play dates on our farm for families with kids on the spectrum, partly also to create a social life for my kid. And I noticed very quickly, absolutely, when I had the horse moving in these rhythms, the kids communicated. And then I figured I got to find out why, because I'm a journalist. Yeah. So I contacted neuroscientists, and I went back to Temple Grandin. She's a neuroscientist. But I also went to a guy called Dr. Robert Navio at the University of California, San Diego, people at the Marie Curie Institute at the Sorbonne in France, and they all gave me the same answer. And basically what they said was, Rupert, you've accidentally stumbled into a way of turning off the cell danger response in the brain. That's the cortisol I was talking about, which blocks learning. And more than that, not just this oxytocin effect of happiness and communication, but there's something else. Your brain produces a protein. People, you should actually just run off if you are an autism parent and grab a pen, because what I'm going to tell you is really good information. There is a protein that your brain produces when you move and problem solve. And this brain, it's everybody on the planet, this brain protein is called BDNF. The B stands for brain. The D stands for derived, made by. The N is a long word, neuro, brain cells, trophic, growing of brain cells, F, factor, effect, the brain growing more of its own brain cells, the brain achieving maximum capacity through moving in this way. And neuroscientists know this, but other people don't. And so what happens is you've got the happiness hormone, the communication hormone, and then this maximum cognitive capacity.
You're retraining or regrowing.
You basically regrow a brain. You basically regrow a brain, yeah. That's what neuroplasticity is. It's really BDNF.
Is it just for the benefits of this, would you say, because I'm thinking in my mind, maybe there are a lot of people who have trauma who might have similar effects, that the brain shuts down. Is it just for autism or does
this? No, we work across the board. So Horseboy Foundation, my organisation, we work in about 30 countries. We have over 100 locations and we work in every area of the brain. So it started with autism, but because the autism population, they're quite unforgiving. They're very authentic, let's say. They're not going to pretend something works just to please you. So it works or it doesn't work. So the feedback is really clear. So we now work with the German Army, the Bundeswehr. We work with the American Air Force, mostly with Special Forces people and their families who've come back from hot deployments and seen a lot of stuff.
Is that aspect, you know, because I suppose if you hear a phrase like growing the brain, it sounds like a very big thing. Is that something that's being studied? Is it something that's being
massively
captured?
Massively studied. No, the science behind it is well established. The difficulty in academia is that, as you know, the scientist in the neuroscience department doesn't go talk to the psychologist. So people stay in these silos, these ivory towers, and you have to be a journalist like you or I to kind of go in and start talking to people and say, hold on, explain to me this. So that crosses this board. Otherwise, people tend to stay in their professional silos. So yes, this is very well studied, but not so many people know about it. Child Vision here in Dublin deliver it amazingly well.
Who are they?
So Child Vision are an organisation that used to be St Joseph's School for the Blind. But the kids who are there, they have an equine therapy unit right in the middle of the city in Drumcondra. Yeah. And for about 10 years, I've been working with them on and off. And I've seen them develop from very small beginnings to, of those 100 locations I work in, I'd say they're in the top three in the world. And one of the reasons is that they mix a whole bunch of modalities. They have an occupational therapist as well on site in the equine unit. They have every medical intervention you can think of that they need. They're incredibly science based, but they have the horses, and the equine therapy team know the neuroscience. So they really understand how to get the horse moving in this way and then how to feed in information. And the results they get are absolutely incredible. And that is why I'm sitting here in the studio, because I'm going to be at the Dublin Horse Show at the Positive Strides thing, which, by the way, you don't have to be interested in horses. Just come, because we've got lots and lots and lots of information just of what you can do at home. But they're going to put in this state-of-the-art equine therapy center in the middle of the city, where kids that wouldn't normally have access to this. And they're already doing a great job. This will allow them to do it on a much, much bigger scale, which the city needs.
Remind me just so I can get it embedded in my own brain. How does that actually work? So you put the young kid or whatever up on it. Is it when their brain is maybe distracted, they're in that?
How it works is this. So first, you've got to train your horse. It's a piece of very, very specialised kit, right? And you've got to train them to go in this. You talked about dressage. You basically have to train a good therapy horse in dressage, because that allows it to move in the way, the rhythmic way, that will provide this hip rocking motion that will create the oxytocin. Once the kid is moving in this way, you will see the oxytocin effect happen in about 15 seconds usually. And then you go and you follow their interests out, either out on the trail. So for example, they've got a field behind where they've got all sorts of interesting sensory trails. Or if you have to do it in the arena, you create treasure hunts and educational experiences for the children to go through that are also have a physical benefit. So for example, if the kid needs to build core strength or needs the hips widened, or maybe the kid has cerebral palsy as well as autism or something like that, you can address all of these things at the same time. And then you can feed in learning because of this BDNF effect. So you can teach, you can do it in French, you can teach math up there.
Yeah, do they realize it's an education program?
No.
Or you're bringing
them
out?
That's the key. So the trick is, do you want therapy? I don't want therapy. Therapy sucks. Because therapy is saying to a kid, there's something wrong with you, you need therapy. And that's not a nice message to give a child. No, you're giving them an experience that for them just feels like pure joy and wonder and fun and feels on a cellular level because of this oxytocin really good, and then ignites the learning centers of the brain. We are curious monkeys, so we're only happy actually when we're learning. We're not happy when we're bored. And then we go in and we learn stuff. So the practitioners know all the science, but that's not the kid's problem. The kid, you always learn your best when you're having fun, and you always heal your best when you're happy.
What, and obviously your own son has been integral to
he was my teacher.
He was your teacher.
Yeah.
What's been called the horse boy method. He was only two when you introduced him to this accidental method that you'd stumbled on. Where is he now in his journey?
He's pretty amazing. He was actually just over with me here. He's 20. He just graduated high school. We homeschooled for many years. And then at 16, he decided he wanted to go to high school. He owns his own house, owns his own car. He's off to college. He's studying finance and philosophy. He helps me when I'm doing trainings for people. He answers their questions on autism, what it feels like from within. And where it's really interesting with him is, rather like Dr. Temple Grandin, he's completely autistic still, but totally functional, both in parallel. He flies back and forth across the Atlantic by himself.
One of our listeners says, I am thrilled, caps lock, that you're talking about Temple Grandin. She is absolutely awesome. And one of the things, and you know this as a parent, of a child, now adult with autism, is that these parents go to the ends of the earth to
get... It forces you to, yeah.
..the information and the supports that they need for their children, including, I'm sure many will be listening, will be looking up, but they will go get their advice. They will take the advice from wherever they can.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And you always get your best advice from other parents, because the other parents are not going to have an agenda about pushing a certain method or some sort of, you know, academic partisanship. They just, does it work or doesn't it work? You know, so if a parent finds something that works, they're going to tell other parents.
Can I ask you a question just more generally? Because I think we are learning so much about the impact of changes to our living and lifestyle that is having an impact on the brain, everything. But even, look, I mean, from your own sense, do you think our more sedentary lifestyles are contributing or perhaps not helping certain conditions that
for
we
sure,
have?
And
I know it's such a minefield when you go in, particularly around vaccinations, everything, the causes of autism, everything can be very, very challenging and difficult in that area. But do you think, having seen through the horse boy method, that movement
movement's at key,
the key. To brain health? Or
well,
to...
if you don't move, you're dead. So animation, to be animated, is to be alive. Your body is moving constantly, even if you don't. The synapses that are reacting in your brain and your spine are actually moving. They're not just like these little lights that flash. They actually move. Things go from one place to another. But yes, BDNF, for example, there's a correlation with dementia. So if you put old people in old people parking, their brains die. Old people that run after grandchildren and have to problem solve all the time and lift them up and run after them tend to be fit in the brain as well in the body.
We have regularly have guests speaking to the power of diet and physical exercise and everything, especially in relation to dementia and Alzheimer's. We had an amazing conversation on the issue last week with author Jan Carson. apart from all of this, you're in Dublin. Yeah. You're going to be doing the demos and obviously you're going to be heading to Child Vision. But as a horseman, coming to the Dublin Horse Show, is that quite an exciting prospect for you?
Yes, and I've never been. And I've been working with horses in Ireland on and off for, 10, 15 years. I've never been to the Dublin Show. And so I'm massively looking forward to it. Anyone listening, I mean, Ireland obviously is one of the top equestrian cultures in the world. Mm. And you're seeing the cream of the cream there. So, yeah, I'll be sneaking off to have a look at.
So we like to think that our horses are amongst the best. But they certainly are.
No. And I actually live in Germany now. And a lot of the time when I've got new clients, I have to try and source horses from Ireland, because there's a particular type of horse that's bred here that is sagacious, athletic and kind.
Which the
Irish have spent about 300 to 400 years perfect. It's called the Irish giraffe, the Irish hunter. And it's almost a threatened breed at this point because of various changes in the sport horse industry. And no other culture really produces this horse. And it's kind of the ultimate riding horse. And
athletic.
The Irish have cracked it. Yeah.
Can I ask you just to, finally, before I let you go, your work, obviously it is, you know, on the one hand, it's equine therapy, but also just the powerful, you know, the equine industry, the sports. Do you find now that, you know, horse owners and horse lovers will probably speak to the power of and the therapeutic benefit of horses? Do you feel a need to educate the sports side, or do the sports side understand the...
Yes, I do. And so we tread the line with that, particularly at our facility in Germany. We train dressage horses there up to Grand Prix. So we train them up to the top level, and we train international riders there. And what we're always saying to people is, this horse I'm training you on, this Grand Prix horse, is also a therapy horse. After you get off and doing all these fancy moves, there's a little autistic kid that's going to come, and this horse is going to take that kid into the forest. There is no separation between the performance horse and the therapy horse any more than there's people are flexible and they have multiple parallel careers, and their parents as well as lawyers, as well as journalists, as well as granddads, you know, and you can be a doctor and a lawyer at the same time. Yeah, horses are, and what horses love is the variety, and they love to give. They're social animals, full of a special desire to connect. That's really integral.
And is that what you'll be doing at the horse
show?
You'll be showing, is it just the horse boy method?
I'll be giving demos of the horse boy method with the team from Child Vision, who are master practitioners. They don't really need me to be there as the mouthpiece. This team are fantastic professionals. I have several hats that I wear. I'm not so much a journalist anymore, but I do still do, we work with horse boy method. We have something called movement method, which is getting the same effects without horses. We do that in schools. We do that in all sorts of places. And that's almost an academic program. And we have something called Athena, which is harnessing that same power I talked about for trauma. But I also still write books, make films, you know, and train horses. So I can wear several hats at a time. But that's modern life, isn't it?
It is indeed. And look, I know it begins on, it's next week, Wednesday the 17th the 21st at the RDS. I think tickets are still available. We might put it up. It's DublinHorseShow.com. Rupert Isaac, thank you very, very much. Rupert Isaacson. And thanks for coming in to us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.